All right, hello everybody, and welcome back to another episode of In Liberty and Health. It seems like the last week or so I've gained a lot of new listeners and followers, and I want to give a shout out to Tom Luongo for that. He's sincerely just good dude with a very, very interesting perspective and very, very well informed, and I appreciate him taking about 2 hours out of his day to talk with me on and off air. So lots of interesting stuff going on lately, and my guest today, I think, is going to be very, very well equipped to talk about the media market, which is something that I like to talk about, perhaps from a different angle. And he comes from a little bit more of a different background, so I think we're going to meld very, very well together. We've spoken before on, I think, one or two different shows, specifically on Five Till Midnight, but I've enjoyed every podcast appearance he's done. He just did the Backlash this past week, and that was a very, very interesting dynamic. I love that show, and I love the people on that show as well. So before we get into today's show, I just want to do my usual shilling. Of course, go to tigerfitness.com to get all the supplements to get you all jacked and tan. I'm out of the strawberry lemonade branched chain amino acids, which is just my absolute favorite. I see somebody else likes this as well, so make sure you go over to tigerfitness.com and use code Kyle at checkout to let them know that I sent you. Deemed fit through the link below. And Fox and Sons Coffee, use code Kyle at checkout. Oh, and for members of the channel, which you should definitely become, for the lowly price of $2.99 a month, you can see the performances that we're going to be doing this weekend in the Common Crown. We're playing a 2-hour set on Saturday, up at the Hazen Flea Market. It's going to be hot as shit. I'm going to be sweating my ass off, but we're going to be playing lots of stuff that we normally don't play out, lots of covers and stuff like that. So if you're into, I don't know, maybe AC/DC, Alice in Chains, so we're going to be doing tons of stuff there. I'm probably going to clip some of it and put it on the channel. But you could see the whole performance for the lowly price of $2.99 a month. So I think that's all my obligatory shilling. Let's get into today's show about the new right wing. All right, everybody, and welcoming to the show, my dear friend Basil. How are you doing, man?
Good. How's it going? So good to talk to you without that faggot Sam around. I'm kidding. I'm kidding. We love
We're getting
Sam.
spicy already.
I'm just busting his balls.
He's a blonde Irishman, so I think it's pretty fitting.
We love our pink nip heroes around here, you know?
Yeah, of course. So, as I said in the introduction, the way you talk about the media market, we were talking about this a little bit off air too, but I find it fascinating to kind of look at the dynamics of who's saying what and why. Because, you know, obviously the thing now, right, is just, oh, you're funded by Qatar if you're kind of in like the more mainstream conservative ink. And I remember you also pointing out, like, oh, this is like the group chat thing. And I thought about this specifically when everybody was talking about like the whole Iran situation there, and every single conservative talking head all said Trump's been very consistent on this, and they're not wrong, but it's always ironic when you see the same take all come out at once. I'm like, and I didn't notice this until you started saying it, and now I start to see it more and more. I'm like, oh, that message got put out. And the people you're talking to are telling you, or that you're taking a check from, or you're trying to market to their audience. Somebody from up high said, this is the talking point. So the talking point, like I said, he's been very consistent on this. Steven Crowder, Matt Walsh, Michael Knowles, who else? All the stupid Daily Wire talking heads. So I've talked enough. Go ahead, Basil, take it away from my incoherent rambling.
No, I mean, I love it. It sounds like to me you're every day becoming more and more literate of the media market, right? That's what I'm all about, is media market literacy from like an anti-left perspective. So, you know, I was completely new to this. I thought, you know, when I first came onto Twitter, I was like one of those COVID dissidents, right? I got forced online because they shut down the world and tried to force me to get a jab, which I didn't get. Shout out to my purebloods out there. So when I came onto the media market, or sorry, when I came onto Twitter, look, I'm sorry, I'm so deep into my own shit, you know? When I came onto Twitter and I was like following the podcast and stuff that I was listening to, I was operating under the impression that like what we were doing was overtly political, right? What we were doing was like kind of like really kind of honing ourselves to resist politically, almost like this is a movement type of thing. Oh, we're bridging the divide between populist left and populist right, because that was kind of the field that I came into, was like that post-left type of thing, right? So come to learn, actually, that as I was, because I came on not just to be an observer, right? I came on because I had what a rhetorical tool, as I like to put it, that I needed to, I was like, listen, I'm a nobody, I have no clout, but I'm listening to these people who seem to have some kind of clout, and they are missing this huge thing that we could get into, like the whole trans question and how it relates to censorship and this type of thing. And I was like, I need to get this in front of you guys because you guys have clout, and I need to hand you this tool so you guys can run with it, right? So as I like started to get noticed, and people were like, oh, this, you know, this fat gay Afghan guy seems to really be able to articulate something, right? You know, you get scooped up into the group chats and you start to like interact with people who are more notable figures. And lo and behold, long story short, I kind of started to see how the sausage was made. And I started to understand that, you know, Twitter obviously isn't real life, right? But every single talking head, every single journalist, every single politician is here on Twitter. And what's happening here on Twitter is that we are collectively honing the talking points. We're weather ballooning the talking points that are going to make their way from Twitter, which is what I call the media market microcosm, to the media market macrocosm of the New York Times, CNN, Blaze, this, that, the other thing, all the big things, right? And there's about like a 6 to 18 month kind of time lapse between where it gets workshopped in the group chats, comes out into the timeline, honed on the timeline, and then makes its way through that channel, right? And you kind of described it earlier where you said, like, you know, someone gets a directive and it's like, some, listen, that happens a lot, right? But very often what happens is, you know, take sellers, you know, just to define a term, people who go out, you and I are both take sellers, right? Take sellers are very, it's a neutral term. It's not, people like to use the word grifter, but that's so loaded with negative connotation. No, we're coming out onto the timeline and we're saying, hey, these are my takes, these are my opinions. If you like them, come subscribe, come whatever, value extraction through that way, right? So we're all take sellers. So what I've noticed is that, you know, take sellers will, just like any market, right? They'll congregate amongst themselves and they'll start to create kind of cartels where they boost each other, defend each other, won't criticize each other publicly. Completely fine. This is all on its face, completely value neutral. But sometimes it'll be like a directive where it's like, this is the take. But very often what it is, it's like, all right, you're in a group chat with your friends who are take sellers and you see something, you know, a current thing that's happening, and someone will share it and be like, kind of sus, kind of weird. Seems like we're going to war. And amongst each other, we'll hash it out. And eventually a take will come about that we understand kind of protects our branding and protects whoever is cutting any of our checks and is not going to alienate our friends or our fans, you know. And that becomes the thing that goes on the timeline, right? And then on the timeline, we see it, you know, reaction, this kind of back and forth. And I think, so I'll wrap it up by saying, I think it's so important for the people who aren't take sellers, right? The audience, as I like to call them. It's so important for the audience to understand what Twitter is and understand, like, if there's a notable figure, someone that you don't know, but you could like name them and say, oh, you know, Orrin McIntyre or Pete Quiñones or Basil from Twitter or Kyle, whatever. We're notable figures to varying degrees. You're engaging in a media market. And listen, if you want to be a fan of any take seller, that's totally fine. Support the take sellers that you think advance your interests, but also try to understand the social and the market connections, right? Such that when you see, for example, say you're a fan of the Vitalist BAP network, right? When you see after October 7th, they start yelling at you as one of their fans saying, no, you can't say that Hamas is Vitalist. You can't say that Hamas is Bronze Age. You're kind of like, oh, right, because you're funded by Israeli government contractors. Right, right. So I could take the good of like, all right, I'm going to slonk some eggs. I'm going to sun my balls. I'm going to fuck the towel boy tranny because I like that shit. But I'm actually not going to go down this rabbit hole with you of like, I have to support Israel because that's Bronze Age.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what's funny is I see this parallel a lot. One of my main focuses with this show is oftentimes to talk about foreign policy things. So like, when I hear people start going off about China stuff, I'm like, oh, you're appealing to the Foreign Policy Network. You're trying to go after the Brownstone Institute, the Hudson Institute, the Rand Corporation, the military industrial complex. When you see Tim Pool talking about slave labor and then he's screaming at that little twink, Brad, whatever, or Palumbo, I think his name is, whatever the hell it is.
Yeah, you seem to be very passionate. I like the middle schoolers.
Yeah, I like the, yeah, the
middle schoolers on Instagram. Palumbo, we're not going to let that one slide.
Yeah, no, of course not. But when they're arguing about the tariff and trade policy, he's not necessarily talking to you or me. He's talking to the Trump administration, essentially, and telling them, hey, we got your back. We're going to sell this war propaganda for you. And that's what I always try to explain to people when they bring up organ harvesting, slave labor, stuff like that. It's like, oh,
Uyghur genocide. This
is, right, exactly. This is all a funnel to build consent for military industrial complex, you know, arms contractors for war with China. Right. So every time I see this kind of stuff and I hear people talking it out, it just goes off in my brain. I'm like, oh, you were sold this by somebody who's trying to sell you their narrative, which typically is, once again, is a war with China. And like, just to cover the other flank as well, which I'm sure everybody's aware of, I don't need to tell you people, this is why I don't like rip on Democrats. Of course, Russiagate is selling you fear of Russia. Just
100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, and I mean, to pick apart the China's a great example, right? Because it's a little bit down the road, so it's not so caught up in like, oh, you're feeling all. Let's talk about China, because it's the exact same dynamics, right?
Yes.
So from the kind of normie cons, the libertarian types, you'll get, and these are all different microcosms, right? For me personally, I spend a lot of my time in the dissident right microcosm, right? The dissident right microcosm is bifurcated between Nick Fuentes and the Bapsphere. Those are the two overarching heavy like fandoms in that microcosm. But there's all kinds of microcosms. You got the libertarians over here, and they got all of their notable figures. You got, you know, that I know some of them, I don't know some of them because they interact. You know, you got your fucking normie cons, you got your leftists, you got your socialists, you got your, you know, resist libs, you got tankies. Your old, you know, tankies, Muslims, yeah, all the kinds of things, right? All these little niche little markets, right, that are all have the exact same dynamics of, you know, notable figure take seller, group chats, you know, fans, signal counter signal, all of the same dynamics that we'll talk about as we continue to talk about media market literacy exist in all of these microcosms, right? So for more of like the libertarian normie con, whatever, you get this like, oh, you know, slave labor, tariffs, you know. For the resist libs, you get the Uyghur genocide. Oh, they're genociding the Uyghurs, whatever, you know. But for us, right, in the dissident right sphere, we get something even more retarded. We get, oh, did you know that actually the Tibetan Buddhists were white? And did you know that actually the Han Chinese were ethnically white? All of this kind of weird ethnographies of Han China. It serves the exact same purpose, right? It's meant to destabilize, to create, ginning up a kind of hatred for the Chinese and desire to destabilize them for whatever reason, right? If you're getting Uyghur genocide, listen, if you're a Turkic nationalist, right? I'm sure there's a microcosm for them, right? They're going to say things like, oh no, you know what it is? It's the Muslims. The Muslim microcosm says things like, oh, we want Turkic pan-Turkism from Turkey to Azerbaijan to Uyghurs, right? Same fucking thing. You want war with China, right? For the resist libs, it's like, oh my God, they're genociding the Uyghurs. We have to arm the Uyghurs to do war with China, right? For the whatever, it's like, oh, Taiwan. We got to go to war with China for Taiwan. For the esoteric Hitlerist, My Little Dark Age Baptist, it's it's, oh, actually, we're doing this because of, you know, esoteric Buddhism. It's like, okay, whatever. Either way, you want me to support a war for the defense contractors who are propping you up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's spot on, really. And I think once people start kind of picking this apart, you can kind of tell where a lot of these narratives come from. And it's so funny because, like I said, you always see just the same takes over and over and over again. And I remember the screenshot that just, I'm sure everybody saw it, was Matt Walsh, Jack Posobiec, and who was the third? Oh, Charlie Kirk. All three of them. We have to stop.
The yeah. Holy Trinity.
Exactly. Yeah. The CIA asset, the dude with the too small of a face, and then the guy who reads from a teleprompter. So, But basically, you know, it was, oh, we have to stop all third world immigration right now. And Matt Walsh, it's like tough for me to read him because he comes off as genuine sometimes. But then you see stuff like that and it's like, I can't believe that these three people had the same exact idea verbatim, not 100% verbatim, but damn near verbatim.
The key words, right? There's all types of
stuff. It was like a
stuff.
Mad Lib.
I remember one time it was because this is going to be really niche for the audience, but I remember one time there was a big kerfuffle of the dissident right because Passover Press put a tranny in their magazine, right? The key word there was either provincial or right-wing ghetto, right? They're like, oh, you're a purity spiraling, you're in a right-wing ghetto, or you're provincial for not liking this, right? So it's like these kind of stupid little buzzwords they pick up in the group chat, and it's like they're not smart enough to be like, we got to diversify our rhetoric a little bit.
Right. Okay, yeah. And I see where you're coming from with that, because it's kind of like, if you're in a right-wing sphere, you would clearly recognize a transgender person as not part of this clique. Because that's an affront to human nature. Let's be completely honest with you. You know, this wasn't something that I necessarily felt, I would say, 2 years ago. But now I kind of look at those kind of doctors and I think you're mutilating human beings. You should be thrown in prison for the rest of your life. If you're putting that in front of an audience like that, guys like us, guys like, you know, Orin, Peter,
like
whoever.
You, more like guys like you. I'm not really the audience. I'm happy to stand outside looking in and being like,
sure.
Yeah. I'm the but, guy at the window meme.
The overall point is just that you would recognize something's off, like exactly. That I have far left people on this channel all the time to talk about anti-war stuff because we agree on that, but like when we would go down cultural roads, we could have that discussion and disagree, but just know like this is going to be where I stand. I'm sure where you stand, you feel perfectly fine where you're at. When you're coming into something like that, like you said, with this whole centerfold of a transgender person, it's like, why are you presenting this to this group that you know is clearly like against this kind of stuff?
It begs the question.
Exactly. Like you're supposed to be an authority in this space, but you're introducing this kind of stuff that calls your credibility and your character into question.
Right. But and the thing is, too, it's like when you said about Matt Walsh, it's like, I think he's genuine. It's like, yeah, that's totally fine. I want so deeply to take the value out of it. Right. To take the moralizing out of it, to be like, let's understand why. Right. We know that this is antithetical to what your audience wants, right? So it begs the question as to why it is in there, right? And so many people, when that happened, kind of did this kind of, you know, I don't want to say low IQ, but kind of surface level, not very deep, like, ugh, fucking tranny, get this shit out of here. It's disgusting. Totally fine. I agree, you know? But if you're missing the actual point. The actual point is, why was he in there, right? And the reason why he was in there, I was one of the only people who was able to and willing to, was really more important, willing and able to point out, well, this tranny was in the magazine because the magazine's publishers sponsored the fashion show that tranny was featured in. The fashion designer and the publishers met together at Urbit Portugal, right? So there's this whole media market connection, this whole social market connection between Passage Press, Elena Velez, Curtis Yarvin's Urbit, Red Scare, and it's what I call the Bronze Age Barry Weiss sphere, right? Because not only is Barry Weiss as part of the Free Press part of this patronage network, when you really break it down and you remove the aesthetics and you remove the branding, the lines that they'll police among their audience are completely indistinguishable from Barry Weiss. And you can see it today, right? You can see an account like Loki, which is this very prominent figure in the Bronze Age sphere, saying the exact same thing that Barry Weiss is saying on Fox News today, where actually bombing is not the same as a war. A war would be boots on the ground. So checkmate, you know? And it's like, well, you are saying the exact same thing, but one of you will say the N-word where the other one won't, you know? Mm-hmm. And there was one,
Well, okay, so I'm glad you're kind of touching on this Bronze Age Barry Weiss network, because she kind of dates back to the whole intellectual dark web, which was just like such a, I don't want to say interesting, but just like a hubbub of pseudo-intellectual people who at the time seem very intelligent and smart, and they're revolutionary in this respect of like, oh, look at these people getting on big platforms and talking about, you know, different ideas that you didn't necessarily hear in the mainstream. But then come all these years later, it's like, oh, you're all Zionists, like literally all of you. Barry Weiss is a literal Israeli lobbyist. So what's going on here? Because I think we found out ever since, you know, more specifically like October 7th, it really kind of pulled the curtain back and you saw a lot of people where they stood on this issue. And you're like, oh, there's a lot more going on here than we realize. Like, this isn't an issue anymore that you could just say, yeah, I'm like ambivalent about it, which I still see people doing. It's kind of funny because, you know, we're talking about Matt Walsh. He says, oh yeah, I don't care about this conflict. We just shouldn't fund it. I'm like, oh, I get that. I empathize with it. But the problem is this issue cares about you. Mm-hmm. It's not like you could just say, oh no, this doesn't matter. Okay, well, when we have speech laws and all this other stuff surrounding Israel, and they're also the one that gets, you know, the majority of U.S. foreign aid, I feel like we have an obligation to say, no, like, this is bad, and especially what they're doing in Gaza and how the U.S. is implicated in every single inch of everything they do. That's something that isn't, you can just be ambivalent about, in my opinion. And you see, like I said, so many people doing this, and I'm like, I don't like that. Like,
there's a couple things, right? And you know, I actually just remembered what I lost my train of thought about.
Yeah, that's okay.
To this, right? So, okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
So, I want to answer your question as to, like, after October 7th, why we're getting here, why it's important, you know, that kind of mask off moment, right? But what I lost my train of thought about what you mentioned earlier was that you said that you would have leftists on here, right? And they'll agree with you about the anti-war stuff, but it's about the culture war, quote-unquote culture war types of things where you kind of have to agree to disagree about. And this is a very important thing that I need the audience to understand, right? Where it's like, if you're pulling the lever for a Democrat or you're pulling the lever for a Republican, you're a liberal, right? We're either left liberals or right liberals, right? We're either vanguardists who are pushing the censorship forward, or we're rearguardists who are shoring up the gains of the previous vanguard, right? So for the left liberals, the Democrats, the way that they advance censorship is through the trans question, right? Through the inclusion of gender identity and expression in the Civil Rights Act. That the Civil Rights Act is the legal framework upon which we are censored online through terms of service, or in our workplaces through HR departments, or in universities through Title IX departments, whatever. That is the legal mechanism through by which we are censored, right? And that's how the left wants to advance that censorship regime. The right wants to advance the censorship regime through anti-Semitism laws.
Yes.
Right? So when you're on the left, you're allowed to critique, you're allowed a little bit of Israel criticism as a treat, because like Glenn Greenwald does all the time, although he's great, he's decent on Israel, he'll always punch right when it comes to defending gay marriage, gay adoption, trans issues, because that's the thing that they're part of the coalition is advancing censorship through. Whereas if you're a right lib, like your libs of TikTok or Billboard Chris or Nancy Mace, you're allowed to go crazy on the tranny. Well, not even. You're allowed to go really hard on the tranny stuff, but you'll always whip everyone back into line on the Israel question, right? So either way, it's two wings of the same bird type of thing. You're advancing it. You're pushing it forward through one way or the other, right? So now when we get to – sorry. Now I'm going to answer the question that you brought about, like 10-7 and stuff like that, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. So 10-7 – was incredibly revelatory, right? Because we had, for example, the sphere that I'm very much in, where it's that dissident rights sphere. We talk crazy. We say TND. We talk about crime statistics. We talk about race and IQ and all this stuff and blah, 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 blah. Vitalism and barbarianism and this and that and the other. But for some reason on 10-7, everyone became a fucking little moral scold, moral fag, pearl-clutching, longhouse faggot. Like, oh my God, you can't beat the fuck out these fucking IDF reservists at a fucking rave. This is horrible. This is crazy. This isn't Bronze Age. This isn't Vitalist. Why? Right? The answer to why is, if anyone in the audience remembers a long, 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 long time ago, back in 2015, there was this thing called the alt-right. Right, these people were explicitly white nationalists, white, whatever, anti. And what I mean by that is that they had a critique of Jewish power and Jewish supremacism, right? And obviously, I'm not an anti-Semite. I love competent doctors and lawyers. I love my Jews. Shout out the Jews. However, I'm not going to lie because I wasn't born with this kind of shibboleth of a Jew in my head where it's going to remind me like the Holocaust. You can't say that the Holocaust. Right. So I'm not going to deny the fact that Jewish people as a group engage in a type of in-group insularism and supremacism within themselves that they would never accept from white people. Right.
Yeah.
So that being said, after Charlottesville, the alt-right blew up and was completely gone. Right. But what you had was this vacuum, right? So what you had was a bunch of tech-funded tech billionaires like Mark Andreessen, Peter Thiel, Susie Schoffer, whatever, from the Manhattan Institute, funneling money to fill up this vacuum. And within 6 months, you had Bronze Age Mindset was published. You had Dasha Nekrasova having her viral InfoWars moment of, I just want to have healthcare, sweetie. And within 6 months, the first episode of Red Scare. So what you had was a concerted effort. Think of Barstool Sports, right? Barstool Sports has a bunch of different properties, right? But all of them fundamentally lead you back to sports betting and Dave Portnoy and Caller Daddy, right? But you have all types of little niches. So in the exact same way, in this vacuum of post-Charlottesville, you had for the left liberals, you had Red Scare, where we're like edgy Bernie tards, right? We hate the left. And for the right liberals, you had Bronze Age Mindset and all, and Raw Egg Nationalist and Passage Press and all of that stuff, and IM 1776, that kind of thing. And what we've realized and what became obvious and undeniable after 10/7 was that these were two, you know, that illusion of choice meme where it's like a cow and it's two paths that lead to the butcher shop. It's the exact same thing. It's the illusion of choice. You're coming from two paths, the same thing that I call Bronze Age Barry Weissism, right? Because Barry Weiss will promote Anna Kachian, and the same people will promote Red Scare and who will promote Elena Velez that's sponsored by Passage Press, et cetera, et cetera. Exact same market connections, right? This isn't a conspiracy. It's all publicly available knowledge. So what you have then, Curtis Yarvin is an intellectual heavyweight in this sphere, right? And so is Nick Land. Nick Land, in discussing Curtis Yarvin, explained it perfectly. It's not hidden, right? They said white nationalists and white nationalism, a la the alt-right, is dangerous in only insofar that they are correct and right about things that no one else is correct or right about. So what they mean is white nationalists, i.e. people who have a critique of Jewish supremacy and Jewish power, are dangerous for people who have financial interests or ethno-religious interests tied up with that, are only dangerous to those people insofar that those people are correct about things that no one else is willing to talk about. So if the white nationalists are the only people talking about race and IQ, are the only people talking about, mass replacement migration, then they're dangerous insofar that they're the only people talking about it. So after Charlottesville, you have this concerted effort to rob those white nationalists of those things that are not their critique of Jewish supremacy and kind of neutralize it and present a kosher version of it. Oh, so it's like, oh, white nationalists, you like talking about race and IQ? Don't go to those TRS guys. We got Steve Saylor for you, presented by Passage Press. Okay. Oh, you like talking about mass replacement migration? Oh, don't talk about those TRS guys. We got our own guys for you to talk about that. But don't worry, we'll talk about we won't talk about H1Bs. Don't be a low IQ. Right? You know? So and I want to make very clear that this isn't a type of quote-unquote low IQ anti-Semitic critique where I'm saying, oh, they're doing it solely because they're hand-rubbing ethno-narcissists. No, the reason that they're doing it is, sure, many of them are just hand-rubbing ethno-narcissists, but the fact of the matter is that people like Peter Thiel have a financial interest because they're tech defense rent seekers, surveillance contract, government contract rent seekers. They have a financial interest in selling their contracts to Israel, who buys a lot of their contracts through Palantir and Arendil and the like, right? So they have an interest in giving Israel a carte blanche to do whatever it wants in the region because it just means more money is going to flow to them. So that's why these people who will tell you, don't listen to Basil, he's brown and he's gay, will then prop up someone like, will sing the praises of Peter Thiel and prop up all of these Thiel-funded Indians, because fundamentally, all of that shit, all of that Bronze Age shit is just branding to sell, to shove down your throat contracts for Palantir, contracts for Arendelle, contracts for, and let me skim off the top to advance my media career in doing so.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to go viral on this post supporting Trump, but though, hey, don't look, I'm not going to say anything about Palantir. I'm not going to say the fact, you know, mention that they're now surveilling all our private data. And then now you start seeing people who are literally saying, oh, what? Whoa, we need Palantir because we need to know who's in this country and who's not. It's like, hold up here, man. I don't know if this is necessarily for the audience anymore, because why are you supporting mass surveillance? Like, weren't we supposed to be anti-government people? And I'm not like necessarily making the libertarian critique. I'm more so making the critique of we want limited government, right? This is what Trump ran on, is reducing government, reducing spending, reducing immigration. But now it's funny how like a lot of this stuff has conveniently flipped. And like, it's so hard to tell because Trump's all over the board and people will find a justification for everything that he says, whether it be good or bad. It's like, okay, well, H-1Bs, there's now been a consistent line about H-1Bs. Are we getting mass deportations so far? It doesn't look like it. They're saying, oh, we need to pass. Yeah, exactly. Right now they're saying we need to pass the big, beautiful bill to get it. But like, I don't know. I keep seeing people counter-signaling Thomas Massie for saying, I'm for mass deportations, but we should just do it in a financially responsible way. And then people berate him for it. But it's like, I don't understand why we have to spend more money for this issue. To me, I think if they wanted to do mass deportations, they would do it. There'd be no questions. You don't need to pass a bill. This is literally like the whole, I'm trying to think of like a good example. Basically, like, we should need to throw more money at this problem and it's going to fix it. And then, once again, all the take sellers, if you will, come to the defense of the Trump administration when they're not doing something they ran on doing, and now you have to do apologia for it rather than just saying, like, they fucked up. Nobody wants to do that.
Throw money at it, because what does throwing money at it mean? Throwing money at it means giving more government contracts to the people who are propping up these take sellers who are telling you need to throw more money at it, right? And it's like, oh, we need to know who's in the country. I'm sorry. You could easily deport 20-30 million people before we even get into a gray area as to who's fucking here and who's fucking not here. Okay. Listen, go on the 4 train. There's 10 bitches with Guatemalans with fucking kids strapped to their back on a fucking blanket selling chocolates and chicles. Let's start with them. And then if we got to figure out who's here, we'll figure out who's here. But it goes to the same type of thing, right? Where it's like, it's constant goal shifting. It's this constant fucking, every day is, because that's the thing. When your job is to just run cover for your benefactors, there's no need to be consistent. You say one thing today, you say the opposite thing tomorrow, and then the third day you pick up whichever one's more useful, and you say, look, I've been consistent the whole time. You know, it's all just about getting from one day to the next, right? And it's the same type of thing where it's like, one day we're saying, okay, the Patriot Act was bullshit, right? It was sold to us on the premise of we're going to get the fucking brown terrorists, right? Whatever. Yeah. But then, therefore, but the grace of God that Trump won, right before Trump won the second time, you know who they were using to the Patriot Act to target? People like you, white domestic terrorists, white people who would go to school board meetings and say, why did a tranny just rape my daughter? That person would be surveilled by the Patriot Act, right? So all of a sudden, because these people, and it's not because they're defending Trump, these people don't give a fuck about Trump, right? What they care about is using Trump as a fig leaf and a human shield to get Vance in, right? Because once Vance is in, then Palantir is in the presidency instead of just the vice presidency. And that's why Vance is always trying to do this kind of delicate dance, because he wants to try to inherit MAGA after. But the point, one quick point I'll make is that, like I said, the reason I came onto Twitter was because I was a COVID dissident, right? I remember, I will never forget, because it's what's radicalized me, was being denied service. I went to go get lunch after work at work, and I was denied service because I didn't have a vaccine passport. Okay. My life changed. It was something so simple. They're like, oh, sir, can you just like actually wait outside? My whole life changed. Okay. Because it was a papers please moment. And what I remember distinctly was the people in front of me in line just turned forward. Papers please, turn forward. And I, it changed my whole life. It changed my whole perspective on everything, right? The only reason I was able to maintain my job is because of the inefficiency in the state of to be able to track my health data. So now you're going to try to make a case that actually it's good that the government is more efficient in tracking all of my data across different departments, including the health department, this, so that the next time it happens, there is no gray area of wiggle room for me to sneak through. They're going to know Palantir has my thing, state cooperation with state governments. There you go. Bing, bang, boom, get him the jab. So fuck you. Nah. Fuck the horse you rode in on. I don't give a fuck if I sound like a brownoid, because I know you sound like a motherfucker who was saying we need to attack them over there before they attack us over here. We need the Patriot Act and blah, 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 blah. So go fuck yourself.
Not yeah. for 100%. And, you know, I take this, I don't want to say necessarily personally, but I was never like the 100% anti-vaccine guy on like the rhetoric stuff, because like, and this is my caveat before I go pretty hard, but it's like, okay, for people over the age of 60, all data I've found seems to be pretty neutral. Younger men, don't do it, because the data seems pretty bad. That being said, my wife had to leave her job because of that specific mandate, right? I'll never forget, and she might still have it, a note that literally said, here, if the police pull you over, you give them this note that you have permission to go to work. To me, that was like, what the hell are we doing?
And but now it was a Palantir letterhead on it. It's based.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly. And that is my whole deal with anti-Semitism speech laws as well. We could celebrate the shutting down and the unaccrediting of Harvard or whatever it is that Trump's doing now. But don't sell it to me as some victory that like Trump did this for the solid fact that he's one of us. He's selling us, you know, this is being sold by some take sellers. And I've seen even people are really like pushing this. This is on the basis of, you know, basically right liberalism. It's the fact that, oh, this discriminated group isn't being treated fairly in this university, so we're taking away their funding. Is it like directionally it's correct, but I don't want to give the people who hate me and the people who want to, you know, force a needle into my arm and tell me what I can and can't say about a foreign government to get a win. And then like, just on principle, this is wrong, because once again, this is benefiting the same people.
Yeah. Stronger. It makes the whole thing stronger. It's the same type of thing when they say like, oh, with the trans stuff, right? They'll be like, oh, I don't care what adults do, but leave the kids out of it. It doesn't matter. The left is very happy to make it so that you can't trans kids, so long as in the Civil Rights Act, gender identity expression is encoded, right? Because it just means that, all right, well, they just have to wait until they're 18 to be a protected class or whatever the fuck the case may be, right? But what ends up happening is, because you're getting rid of the most egregious part, you're actually making it more palatable. You're making it harder to oppose, because you're actually strengthening it by making the most taking away the most odious, offensive aspects of it. Where it's like, no, the whole thing is rotten. Just because you cut out the most rotten part doesn't mean that it's now edible, you know? But they'll shove it down your fucking throat.
Of course, of course. So the one other thing that on the backlash that you talked about that like little light up, and I don't know why it never clicked for me, but when you were talking about kind of like sexual and gender identity, how it's protected under the Civil Rights Act, and like I should definitely be more well-informed about like all the ins and outs of this, but though when you were talking about how like sexual identity is protected by law and you don't want that to be for you, and that really clicked for me. It's like, holy crap, we're talking about something so arbitrary, and I don't want to say it's undefinable, but like, how do you know somebody is gay? Like in California and New York, right? To throw a bone to more even normie cons, if you misgender somebody, you could be fined. Like if you're a tenant or if you're a landlord and you misgender somebody, you could be fined in the state of California or New York. That's strictly on someone's arbitrary decision of what their identity is at that moment. How do you know that? And then, like, this is such a ridiculous thing. Like, we shouldn't have any special protections for anybody under any laws, because you have constitutional protections as an individual that lives in the United States as a citizen of this country. If you are a foreigner, then, okay, we don't extend those protections to you because you're not a citizen of this country. But under the Civil Rights Act, you, Basil, and not that you necessarily do this,
I'm you're legally a gay man. Privileged over you.
Exactly. Right. I'm a white straight guy. I'm not a Christian, but I am, you know, I'm a straight white guy who's married to a woman. Right. Mm-hmm. Our daughter is going to be here in, you know, about a month and a half.
Oh, mazel tov. My,
thank you. Yes. My wife and my daughter will have additional protections that I don't have because they're women. Right. So, right. When you look at this through like the Marxist lens, then, okay, well, they're a woman. So they're already defended under one aspect of the civil rights law. You, Basil, you're defending on another right, and then so on.
Brown and gay, I love, yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, so, okay, so I actually take the Ann Coulter, so let's just say I really try to focus on things that are in political contention, right?
Sure.
What's actually up for debate right now, right?
Mm.
So when people say, oh, Basil, you bang on a lot about the fucking trannies, but here you are, a faggot, saying so, I'm like, totally true. However, the gay question is not in political contention, right? Yeah. At this moment, at the state level, even at the federal level, the Equality Act has not passed. The expansion of the Civil Rights Act is on the basis of gender identity expression. 10 to 15 years ago, yes, the gay question was the bleeding edge of it, right? And I would have been here saying, no, sexual identities aren't real. But at that time, what they did was, I'm sure you remember, like, back in the day on fucking, like, Sally Jesse Raphael or Oprah or Geraldo, it was all about the gay gene, the gay gene, the gay gene, right? Mm. We were talking about Ellen coming out and fucking Matthew Shepard and all this. Matthew Shepard was gay Floyd, right? Gay George Floyd. It was, like, that kind of fake narrative to push forward the expansion of the Civil Rights Act. So at that time, right, they kept everyone on a hamster wheel talking about, oh, are you born this way? The gay gene, blah, 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 blah. Meanwhile, the political apparatchiks are working overtime behind the scenes to get sexual orientation codified in the law, right? And then the second it was, no one gives a fuck about talking about a gay gene anymore. No one fucking cares about that shit. Mm. Now what we're talking about is, oh, brain scans and, oh, bathrooms and sports. All that shit is downstream of whether does a person have a gender identity and should it be recognized in law? The answer to both of those questions is obviously no, right? But it goes back to your whole, like, the difference between, you know, when I use the word, I use the trademark symbol a lot, right, online. I use the TM. And I use that for black TM, woman TM, gay TM, trans TM. And what I mean by that is to say I'm not talking about people with African ancestry. I'm not talking about females. I'm not talking about guys who fuck guys, and I'm not talking about cross-dressers. I'm talking about the people who fall under those categories who then take the extra step of adopting for themselves a political identity that is protected under the Civil Rights Act. So now why I brought that up was to say I like to focus on what's in contention. And repealing the Civil Rights Act, of course, yes, let's repeal the fucking Civil Rights Act. But no one's really talking about it in terms of like a political, cognizable political coalition that's saying as a plank, we're doing this, right? Right. So I take the Ann Coulter position on the Civil Rights Act. I say when the Civil Rights Act was passed, right, whether you agree with it or not, it was meant to address the legacy of slavery for foundational Black Americans, right? Whether that's still relevant today is an open question, blah, 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 blah. But that's what it was meant for. However, since its passing, it's been expanded over and over and over again. So you had that fucking gender, that fucking goblin, Ruth Bader Ginsburg in the 60s and 70s, expanding it to expand it from just, it went from foundational Black Americans to all racial minorities. Then to create a protected class for women, and then to create a protected class for sexual orientations, then to create a protected class for trannies or whatever. And for each of these instances, what's happening is you're creating a client class, right, that is able to, among the pool of females, a client class who are going to adopt for themselves that political identity of woman, who are then able to be take advantage of those legal privileges, right, and act as foot soldiers to defend it, right? So they're going to be like, you can't be sexist in the workplace. You can't discriminate based on sex. And by doing so, create further censorship, because now HR departments, you can't have sexual harassment in the workplace. You can't discriminate against women. You can't go goodbye free association, right? And further and further with the gays and whatever and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So when it comes to like what you talked about, where
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
It's like this kind of who's to say, who's to know. I've been celibate for 3 years, right? As a religious, because I'm Muslim, I'm not a good Muslim, but I choose to because, you know, I'm not, I sin enough, right? I'm not trying to rack them up. So, you know, who's to say my subjective attractions that defines who I am? This is lib bullshit. Any Orthodox Christian, any Orthodox Jew, any Muslim knows exactly what I'm talking about. You hate the sin, but you love the sinner, right? You don't adopt for yourself the identity of your sin, right? You don't say, oh, because I committed sodomy once or twice in my life, I am now this different type of person. I'm a gay man, right? But if the Civil Rights Act is such that by me saying I am a gay man, I become legally privileged over you, well, now I have an incentive to do so, right? And in this exact same way, it's like cross-dressers have always existed. Effeminate men have always existed, right? Masculine women have always existed. But what's happening now is that mentally ill perverts, cross-dressing freaks, and whatever are being collapsed into one category that we call trans TM because it's about expanding the Civil Rights Act to include that patrons class. And thank you for calling me Bates. I appreciate it.
For the listeners, Nate Shumway said this Basil guy is pretty base. Yes, he is. And this is
my cousin, that guy.
This was something that I didn't really think about either, but I heard Dave Green say it once, where he said, like, gay as an identity wasn't a thing until pretty recently. And then I started thinking about that more and more. I'm like, you know, that actually makes a lot of sense because, like, all throughout history, there were definitely men who were attracted to other men. And, like, that just is what it is, right?
It is. You're not judging a moral, like, whether it's good or bad. Exactly. Obviously, it's a sin or whatever, but it is what it is.
Yeah, you can't change. You're not going to be able to change that about some people. You're always going to have just, you know, in a group of 1,000 people, one person's going to have some genetic trait that's going to predispose them to be a bodybuilder or something like that. Like just some weird fucking genetic situation. You can't get rid of that. So, but like you said, when you have the Civil Rights Act, then people adopt this identity because now, hey, I get, you know, legal or social power over people because of strictly this, which really, I think, once again, this goes back to the whole idea that, like, when you're voting, you're either a right liberal or a left liberal because you're still kind of going back to that and supporting, you know, this whole ordeal of protecting people based on race and identity. And it's such a insidious thing when you think about it, but I don't think a lot of people do. And the more I think about it, the more I realize, like, wow, that really is where a lot of things went wrong.
It's about all these, like, ideological, we're talking about liberalism, like capital L liberalism. It's about these, like, ideological priors that we have baked into us as Americans, really. Like,
yes.
This whole thing about, like, blank slate theory, you know, equality of men. It's all these things these are not necessarily true. These are ideological priors that we believe. Like, if you want to look at what actual illiberalism is, go look at the Taliban, right? That they go look at Afghanistan. They don't believe in this type of, like, blank slate to them, but their truth derives from religious law. This was true of Europe before the Enlightenment, right? The Enlightenment was was the advent of capital L liberalism. It's where we got all of our ideological ideas about liberalism, as from Ricardo and Locke and Rousseau, and all that stuff is from the Enlightenment, which was a direct refutation of the absolutist reign of, you know, absolutist monarchy and stuff like that, where they derived their legitimacy from God, right? In the same way that, you know, an Islamic emirate derives its legitimacy from God and rejects liberalism and says, like, no, we don't believe in women's rights because we believe that men and women are different. Not this, like, Mary Wollstonecraft equality of women thing where women as human beings have the exact same equal right to the public sphere, right? Obviously, men and women are equal in dignity and value, right? But I think I'm speaking for myself only as a Muslim and whatever. men and women are different and have different roles in society, that women, as a rule, should not be accessing the public sphere as it was in this country before the sexual revolution, right? Even before the sexual revolution, there were women involved in public life. But because the general rule was that that wasn't the case, you know what women got involved in public life? Exceptional women. Women who were really like thinking about it and acting like a man or whatever it may be. But I want to talk about a little bit this kind of trajectory of where we get, where gay as an identity comes from, right?
Sure.
And, you know, this is something where in the dissident right, I kind of, there are very few people who come from the dissident right from the kind of perspective that I come from, right? A lot of people who get there because they read people like Evola, they read Curtis Yarvin, they read Nick Land, you know, they were a Nazi or something, whatever it may be. I got here from being an anti-left Marxist, reading Marx, reading Lenin, reading Foucault. And the reason I bring it up is because of Foucault. Foucault's history of sexuality was very formative for me in understanding this, right? So what we have is, for all of human history, right? Like we said, there are people who have fucked the same sex, right? And I, you know, what it, same-sex attraction is not always exclusive, right? I'm mostly exclusively same-sex attracted, right? However, same-sex attraction could also be situational. It could be habitual. It could be occasional, right? Where it's like, well, the whole phenomenon of prison gays, or something where it's like, oh, I saw a towel boy. I'm a normal guy, but something triggered in my brain for half a second. It's all situational. It's based on a certain situational thing. It's not exclusive, right? So it was always about the act. It was about the act being a crime, of being a moral failing, right? And this was the way it was until like the 19th century. Right. And around the 19th century, because of liberalism, right, because of the myth of the rational actor, the myth of the blank slate, right, you have to then start to attribute, you have to start trying to explain why certain people aren't able to compete in the market. Right. Mm-hmm. There has to be some sort of thing. Oh, it's because of discrimination based on their race. Oh, it's because of discrimination based on because they're a woman. That explains why they're not able to compete with, you know, under as a rational actor. So that way the state has to then come in and level the playing field. So it's in this context that around the 19th century, we have things called homophile societies in London, in New York, in Boston. Think of Oscar Wilde, this type of person, right? Who's like, you know, kind of very openly flaunting it, kind of wink, wink, nudge, nudge. And what they start to try to do is they try to, one, they want to normalize it, right? But really what they want to do is they want to decriminalize it. And how they do that is by saying, oh, look, this is not a moral failing. This is actually a mental illness. Right. So we have to have some sort of compassion for these people, some sort of whatever. And in that moment, the homosexual as a person was born. Right. Because prior to this, homosexual would not describe a person. It would describe an act. Is this act homosexual or heterosexual? Is it same sex or opposite sex? But in creating this mental illness of the homosexual, someone who committed sodomy here or there once in a while now became a homosexual, something taxonomically different from a regular person, right? And then eventually you go through the thing where after the sexual revolution, you have gay liberation, where they say, actually, no, we're not mentally ill, despite all evidence to the contrary. We're not mentally ill. We're just like you. Actually, we're just like you, but we need to have social protections and legal protections. And in that moment where the sodomite became gay, TM, normal men became straight. Straight is a sexual identity just like gay is. You're not straight. You're normal. Okay? You're not cis. You're normal. Cis, calling yourself cis is being just as much of a tranny as calling yourself a tranny, because you're saying, I have a gender identity that aligns with my sex. No, buddy, you don't have a fucking gender identity. You're just fucking normal. You're not straight. You're just normal. I'm deviant, whatever. And for me, it's beneficial because, like, for example, just a couple weeks ago, when captive dreamer Jeff Martin doxed me and posted my place of work, and said, oh my God, this guy is a Nazi, whatever. And I started getting emails to my work saying that I'm a Nazi and that I'm a white supremacist and whatever. Guess what I'm going to do? When I'm in HR, I'm like, listen, girl, yes, God, hunty, yes, God, Allah, Akbar, baby, I'm brown and gay. because I can, and I'm going to defend myself. It's a rhetorical shield. It's why I'm able to say so much of the thing that normal men without racial or gender or sexual identities would get fucking destroyed for. Because at any moment, I could pick up this sword and shield of being brown and being gay and defend myself. I could also, if I wanted to, start attacking people to my right, being like, oh, you have a problem with a take of mine? You're racist. You're homophobic. I have never done that, and I would never do that because I hate the left, and I don't want to empower it by attacking people to my right. But it's that's why people are distrustful of based gays and based women and based blacks, because we all know that at any point we could fall back to that liberal identity category and weaponize it against the right. And anyone who denies that is a liar and is being subversive. At least I'm telling you straight up, listen, I know that. And if you see me doing that, call me the fuck out.
Yeah, you know what's funny is that I think I've internalized that so much, because when I see women who are like super hardcore right wing, it's like, okay, you're saying a lot of the right stuff, but I'm weary. I'm patient, but I'm weary. Usually most women, and my wife is, you know, definitely one like this, just apolitical. I don't really care about your
politics.
As they
should be. The good ones usually are.
Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, same deal. When you see,
otherwise you're going to be Ashley St. Clair, right? And you're going to say a lot of interesting, but then these right-wingers are saying repeal the 19th. We have to censor them. We have to kick them off the internet. Look at you. You're defending your woman TM political category by making a boogeyman out of this meme. No one's repealing the 19th. No one's talking about repealing the 19th. It's a fucking meme. But because
it's never going to happen. Yeah.
It's never going to happen. But because it's used to tell you to shut the fuck up when you have a bad take, you want to censor people to your right. She's picking up that sword and shield of being a woman TM and attacking people to her right. She should have been fucking jettisoned off the fucking reservation at that moment.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. And she also has the other identity that, you know, is forbidden to talk about. Obviously, it's just her being a Jewish woman. Being a Jewish woman at any time.
I thought you were going to say Canadian.
But basically, she can say it anytime. Yeah. I don't like all these anti-Semites. Yeah, oh, yeah, it's the Canadians. The Canadians, the Qataris. Yeah.
Listen, Qataris, if you're listening, the Cash App is a $ Bear Bactrian.
Yeah, yeah. Well, my name's down here as well. So yeah, if there are any Qatari checks floating out there, I could use some. We're gonna be we're gonna need
fools.
A little.
We're doing
cash.
It for free.
Yeah, exactly. You see this all the time, and like this whole term "woke right," I find to be so tedious and so dumb, because the people who it should apply to are the ones that are applying it to people that it doesn't apply to. And I don't even use the term woke at all, because like it's so meaningless at this point. But like, okay, if anybody should be called woke, right, it should be the people who are saying we're trying to protect people on the basis of their identity. And
yeah,
like,
we're trying to cancel you by calling you anti-Semitic. Right. Hey, replace anti-Semitic with racist or sexist or bigoted or whatever. You're the woke one.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and I loop Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis in with this, and people kind of look at me weird, but I'm like, okay, they're literally saying we need safe spaces on college campuses for Jewish students. I'm like, if you saw this from anybody else that you didn't like, you would call that woke. I don't use the term, but I'm saying if we're going to have a term, the people that are saying that we need safe spaces on campuses for our chosen grievance group, then I'm sorry, you would fit that definition of woke if you just ad-libbed out Jews for trannies, right? It's so dumb and it's so tired. And once again, the James Lindsays of the world will look at you and say, oh, you're woke right because you don't want to fund Israel. It's like, all right. Screw you, dude. Yeah.
It's like, sorry, because you have one more protected class than I do. I have zero and you have one. I'm woke. Go fuck yourself. But that's the problem with, like, not just James Lindsay's a very obvious one, right? But think about someone like Chris Rufo. The whole Manhattan Institute project, Chris Brunette did a lot of great work on this, where they got rid of Christine Gay, whatever, President Gay of Harvard, right? By saying, oh, you know, this is a huge win for us because she's anti-white or whatever. No, you got rid of her because she's anti-Israel. Or because she's critical of Israel, right? The person that they replaced him, Chris Brunette, in his story, told about how there was another person that he was going to go after. It was Bill Ackman's wife for the same reason, for the plagiarism thing. They put the fucking kibosh on it. Why? Because she is pro-Israel. And the whole and even if you there's an interaction between that James Lindsay had mentioned that he had with Chris Rufo, where Chris Rufo told him to lay off the trans thing. Chris Rufo then, you know, hires that prostitute Christina Buttons, who left the Daily Wire. Why? Because they were too mean about trans people. So we have to be very critical about these people. And even though we understand, like, all right, maybe this is a kind, this is like a quasi win. I can't even say this is a win, because what you're doing is you're propping up and you're strengthening this other protected class. You're saying, oh, this is a win for me as an anti-left. Why is this a win for me as an anti-leftist, right? It's the same thing when people were like, that thing that you mentioned where it was like Posobiec and Kirk and
Walsh
saying the same thing. Be like, oh, just take the win. Just take the win. I'm sorry. I'll take the win when Matt Walsh says mea culpa for 3 years ago, saying that if you said this, you are a reprehensible white supremacist and that you should be removed from the discourse. When you say that, then maybe I'll take the win. But for now, it just sounds like you're, again, like I said earlier with Nick Land talking about Curtis Yarvin, it sounds like you're just taking this thing from people who have a critique of Jewish supremacy and neutralizing it by saying, oh, well, we're doing a kosher version of that.
Yeah, you know, I never thought about it in that way either, that like when you see people like talking points getting mainstreamed, right? Like the when people say the Overton window, oh, the Overton window has shifted so much in immigration, but like the president and the people who are kind of steering this policy are saying, oh, we need lots of legal migrants now, which is like, oh, okay, so I see what this was, is that the Overton window amongst people like you and I in our media sphere, the talking point of like no immigration moratorium is like normalized, we're all about it. But then you have people that tell you, oh, Trump is the guy who's going to send them all back. He's not. And then he turns around and says, oh, we need to have this H-1B, you know, we need to have all these Indians coming in. Yeah, the fake meltdown, the Elon meltdown. Yeah.
It's a perfect example, because in the media market, right, they're like, oh, we got them. We won. Because, look, Elon Musk is too autistic to do what he's supposed to do, right? He gets out there on the timeline and says, fuck yourself in the face. We're going to have a million. We're going to have infinity Indians, right? But there is no daylight between him, Peter Thiel, David Sachs, all of these people, these Silicon Valley tech billionaires all want H-1Bs, but they're smart enough to not say it publicly, where Elon Musk says, go fuck yourself in the face because he's too much on Twitter, right?
Yeah.
But we won during that Christmas debate. 3 months later, they approved 170-something thousand H-1Bs, right? Because of Silicon Valley tech billionaires who have taken over MAGA in the past 4 years, that's in their interest. So they'll have us be on a fucking little hamster wheel where we think we won in the media market. Meanwhile, in the actual halls of power in Congress, nothing has changed. Where are the mass deportations? What they're giving us is they're giving us ASMR videos and little Ghibli edits of crying fat Mexicans. Meanwhile, there's no mass deportations. And I say all the time, it's like, I'd rather have millions of people shuffled out of here quietly and never see it, as opposed to getting some fucking red meat for me to jerk off to about, like, oh, the ASMR video. Meanwhile, every time I get on the fucking 4 train, there's the same amount of fucking Guatemalans who are going to go to a 4-star hotel where they get turned down service every fucking day.
Right, exactly. Or, you know, I think about it when my wife and I go to Florida, or like when we were in Atlantic City last year, which it feels like it feels like a lifetime has passed since then. But from 7 a.m. in the morning when my wife and I were in East Rutherford, I remember I was walking around before she was up. I had 3 people ask me for fucking money. It's like, are you serious? From 7 to 10 a.m. When we're down in Florida riding around on the tram, going around the airport, it's like half these people don't speak English. When you go to, I live in fucking small town Pennsylvania, right? Going to a Charlie's that just opened up not 6 months ago, I want to say, there isn't a single person in there that's white. They're all Mexican or Guatemalan or something like that. They hardly speak English. And it's like, this is like the fucking country. what are you doing here? Like, yeah. Where you're from, you don't see snow. We see fuck tons of snow. What are you like? What are you doing here? You shouldn't be here.
You came here to be a beggar. You came here to be a beggar. It makes me actually sick to my stomach. And it's like, especially because, you know, not to hold myself apart. Obviously, you know, I was born and raised here, but, you know, I'm brown. I got to go back, blah, blah, blah. Of course, just put me on the last plane. That's all I asked for. But, you know, my parents came here because the Soviets invaded their country. Okay. And because of the geopolitical reality at the time and Charlie Wilson's war and all that stuff, my parents came here as asylum seekers. It offends me, actually, to see these Guatemalans come here, and the basis for their asylum claim is gang violence. I'm sorry, by that fucking logic, give all of Southside Chicago I-9s to go to fucking Denmark. What are we talking about? Good luck going to Denmark. You got Somalians there fucking stabbing you, too. My point being is that, I'm sorry, gang violence and economic interests does not a refugee make, and it actually, like, refugeeism and asylum is actually, like, one of the very, very few aspects of international law, which is mostly fake and gay. It's one of those things that's actually kind of real. Since, like, the Westphalian Treaty, things like diplomatic immunity, asylum, these things are, like, the bedrock of what international law is. It's like, okay, you are fleeing political violence and, you know, war and whatever. Maybe a country takes you in, and maybe there's some sort of legal basis for that, right? But this thing where it's like, oh, it's because, you know, my country's poor, so I'm a refugee. No, you're a fucking economic migrant.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. And this was something that I kind of changed my mind on, definitely within the last year, where it's kind of like, my country and my home isn't an economic zone, right? Like, you shouldn't be able to come here and prosper however, wherever, you know, whatever you want. Like, these are resources that need to be found, that need to find a way back into the community, back into the country. And this is why I kind of like favor mass deportations and, you know, a complete and total immigration moratorium. Because it's like, if people like me, right, I just turned 30 back in November, I'll be 31 this year. My wife and I are officially having our first kid, where in an ideal world, we would have had a kid within the first 2 years that we've been together. We've been together for going on 6 or 7 years. Until people like me and her can like comfortably save up, have a family, have two cars without working, you know, two jobs that we don't thoroughly enjoy, I don't want to hear anything about economic migrants. I don't want to hear anything about any other country's problems. I don't want to hear anything about foreign aid. Let's fucking fix America for Americans before we start talking about, oh, well, you know, refugees here, refugees there, even the Afrikaners. I'm sorry, you got an awful situation, not America's problem. You got to go back to.
No, it's true. I mean, it shouldn't be fucking crazy or beyond the pale to say, I think Americans should be on a stable footing before we even consider opening floodgates to the fucking third world, which is only going to make precarious Americans more precarious. But the reason that we do it is because the tech, defense, pharma, and finance industries that are currently ruling demand cheap slave labor. And this is the thing, too, where it's like, you know, you can even get a little bit more nuanced here, where it's like, you know, oh, okay, we have the Overton window rhetorically to the point where we could say, all right, mass deportations is on the table, but they want us to accept H-1Bs. Let me be fucking straight up and completely fucking honest with you. The goal has always been to make enough money so that you're insulated from the ramifications of having to live around these people, right? That's like a funny tweet that goes around a lot. You know, who picks my fruit is actually of less concern to me. I'm an attorney, as a white collar person, than flooding the country with H-1Bs for me to compete with. Okay? Because I could make enough money to insulate myself from the Guatemalan who's like chocolates, chicolates, whatever, you know. So, but why are we importing Chinese and Indians to compete with me for my white collar job? It's actually more of a direct threat to my interests to import H-1Bs than it is to import fruit pickers. Listen, get them all out of here. But if we're talking across the board, it's the H-1Bs are actually more of a threat to me.
Right. Yeah. And this is another thing that, it's been interesting to see the way that this plays out, because it's like, okay, well, the H-1Bs, they're going to make more money and they're going to push up wages and house prices and all this stuff. Illegal immigrants are going to do the same thing. there's a multifaceted problem, and it doesn't seem like there's any will to address it. Like Stephen Miller, I'll give it to him. He seems serious about the issue, but at the same time, like why would this not happen? But I think it's kind of to your point, where it's tech, defense, farm, and finance. There we go. I can't believe I memorized that.
Let's go. Let's go.
The NGOs traffic these people over into this country, and then I'm sure they're lobbying on behalf of their interests. And now it's like, okay, well, in order to mass deport these people, now these NGOs are going to have to be put up against the wall, essentially. And nobody has the balls to really do that. It sounds good on the campaign trail to say you're gonna deport them all, but
get into why that is, right? Because tech, defense, pharma, finance, right? I always say that all the time. Because I don't call myself a right winger. I obviously don't call myself a white nationalist. I'm brown. All right, whatever. Anyway, the point being is
the brown face of white supremacy.
Exactly. I don't call myself a right winger. I'm not a social conservative at all. Like I'm a fucking hedonist, right? But the point being is that, like, you know, I have to be in. So I'll get to that in a second. The reason why I say tech, defense, pharma, finance is because I say the only extant political coalition that exists is the left. That's why I call myself an anti-leftist. There is no such thing as the right. It doesn't really exist in the form of like a political coalition. When I talk about the left, I'm talking about tech, defense, pharma, finance as the industries that fund cosmopolitan PMCs, professional managerial class people, and the aspirants thereto who work in those NGO sectors, right? Who work in these kind of laptop job, make work jobs, who are in coalition between them, the PMCs, and I'm a Marxist, the lumpen proletariat, right? These these migrants, these vagrants, these OnlyFans prostitutes, these welfare recipients, these, you know, bums, these whatever, the people that they let out of the prisons, right? When it's always these Soros DAs catching and releasing, that's a coalition between the PMCs who vote for the DA and the lumpen proletariat criminals who get let out all the time to terrorize normal working people, right? So that's a political coalition. You got your funders, you got your constituent parts, you got how the money is allocated because those tech, defense, pharma, finance industries fund the NGOs, which hire the PMCs who work to like, oh, we're doing, you know, gay advocacy, or we're doing homeless shelters, or we're doing suicide hotlines, or we're doing whatever it may be, the Trevor Project, this, that, the other fucking thing, right? That's a political coalition that has a patronage network, a client network, money flows through it. There's no analogous aspect to that. So there's only the left. There's little pockets of anti-left action, right? Of people who try to roll back the Civil Rights Act, who try to advocate for mass deportations, this type of thing. But that's it. There's the left, little pockets of anti-left action, and no everyone else, right? So when I say, like, I'm not a social conservative, right? But I know if I want to be an anti-leftist, I'm going to be in political coalition with social conservatives, right?
Word.
So the point is, I don't give a fuck who you fuck. I don't give a fuck how you dress. I don't give a fuck any of that shit. So long as you don't use who you fuck privately to punch right by saying, whoa, you want to overturn Obergefell? Well, I fuck guys, so you can't do that. No, go fuck yourself. You're running cover for the left, right?
Gotcha.
So I have to understand that it's like whatever I may or may not get up into in the shadows, I'm not going to, like I said, adopt this gay identity to punch right against social conservatives, right? And we see it all the time. But with the tacit understanding that social conservatives shouldn't make themselves a poison pill. And to give a good example of this is like when Trump said he wasn't going to do a federal abortion ban, you saw a lot of these Christian TM take sellers trying to be like, well, that's it. I can't support Trump because he's not going to do a federal abortion ban. Go fuck yourself, actually. Because what you're saying is before the election, Trump should shoot himself in the foot and his campaign in the foot because you're too lazy to do what the left did with gay marriage, which was go get your NGOs, go fund your NGOs, go fund your foot soldiers at the state level to work your way through the states, and then eventually you get Obergefell at the federal level. What you want is for Trump to completely destroy his campaign so that you don't have to do any work and then say, oh, well, you know, we got a federal, you're not going to get the federal abortion ban, but what you did was you made yourself a poison pill.
Right.
Hold on. I just wanted to say really quickly, I am not. There's someone in the chat who says, because you know we said earlier that, you know, people have been fucking men since forever, whatever, whatever, whatever. Should we accept these? That's not the fucking point. First of all, I understand that I am a brown cave monkey and whatever happens in Afghanistan happens in Afghanistan. I am not advocating for bestiality, okay, man? Like, calm down a little bit.
Jeez, yeah. The other thing I wanted to touch on was the sexlectics, which kind of touched on a little bit. And it wasn't something I thought about too much when it comes to like this political sphere. But like the more and more I interact in different spheres, so like starting from the libertarian sphere into music and then now more into the dissident rights sphere, I begin to see that like the same behaviors pop up and up and up and up. And no matter what, like you can't purge purity spiraling. You can't purge drama. You can't purge a lot of this stuff from different spaces. You also can't purge people's sexual desires. You just can't. All this stuff is innate to the human condition. You can find ways around it to mitigate it, but someone somewhere is going to have a breaking point.
People are going to stalk and they're going to fuck. Let's
see. Right. Exactly. So you'd mentioned Chris Rufo earlier and kind of how that Christina Buttons got hired. But I remember hearing about some other people in the libertarian sphere about, you know, oh, well, she's married and has kids to her husband. But you find out, oh, well, there's a reason why she's going on all these big shows. And it's not because of her wonderful views, all of which could be summed up as,
it ain't,
you
about
know,
what's coming out of her mouth. It's about what's going into her mouth. Let's just say that. All right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I mean, I love sex lectics. Because I said, I'm a fucking pervert. All right. So let's talk about it. Right. Sex lectics. What do I mean by that? So the reason I coined the term is like, I wanted to hearken to the word dialectics, right? To have a material analysis of any given political economy, right? You got to, in order to understand how a given society works, you got to understand where the money is, right? Where is the money flowing? Where are the civil institutions? Where are the political coalitions? All that stuff. And that'll get you so far in understanding the motivations and why things happen, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But once you understand that, what you should be doing is then a sexlectic analysis. You got to go beyond the dialectic. We got to get to the sexlectic. And what I mean by that is to say, at the heads of these institutions, at the heads of these firms, at the heads of these companies, at the heads of these publications and institutions, whatever it may be, there are individuals, right? And if you want to start really understanding why certain things happen, you got to understand who's fucking who. Who's in whose DMs, who wants to fuck who, all of that shit. And then you could start really kind of understanding why things are happening the way they are. Because like you said, sexuality is part of the human condition. People are going to suck and fuck. And as long as there's been this type of shit, there's going to be this kind of sexualized patronage where people sleep their way to the top. And it's not, let me break it to you. It ain't just women and it ain't just people who call themselves gay. Let's just say that, right? If you go to a Founders Fund barbecue because you want a Founders Fund is the investment wing of Peter Thiel's network, right? It's how they invest money. If you want to go to a Founders Fund barbecue to get investment for your publication or your app, let's just say there are no women there, okay? And you're getting your cheeks clapped, buddy. So it's about, you know, understanding. And, you know, let's use Christina Buttons as a perfect example, right? Christina Buttons, at the time that she got hired by the Manhattan Institute, who was a Manhattan Institute fellow? Colin Wright. Colin Wright, turns out, has been fucking Christina Buttons. So Christina Buttons gets a job through her boyfriend at this fucking institute. Boom, there you go, sexlectics, right? All types of shit. You'll see stories all the time of like, oh, XYZ congressperson was fucking his aide and his aide turns out to be some sort of like involved with some NGO and that's why the congressperson proposed a bill to funnel money to that NGO. All that shit. If you didn't know that XYZ person was fucking XYZ person, you would completely lose this whole level of analysis and you kind of like have to chalk up to the invisible hand of the market things that are actually part of like a visible dick and balls and sucking and fucking and all that shit, you know? So I love sexlectics, and it's one of the things I'm very proud of, and it's like something that's very simple and intuitive. I'm not the first person to suggest like people suck and fuck their way to get to, you know, advance themselves through the media market or any industry. It's any industry. The boss fucking his secretary and the secretary gets a promotion. That's sexlectics, right? If you didn't know that the boss sucking fucking the secretary, then if you're like one of the other secretaries, like, why does Linda keep getting her time off approved? Because of sexlectics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Hopefully my it said my internet went a little choppy there for a brief second, but I got everything that you said. It's so funny because, like, when I hear people talk about conspiracy stuff, the one thing I feel like a lot of these guys kind of leave out is that there is a human nature underneath all of this. And that's kind of like what you're getting at here is just like, okay, well, there's a human nature and women are going to use that human nature to their advantage. And this is what my friend Ryan calls feminism, is essentially a tactic. Feminism is an ideology. It's a tactic. It's using men's better instincts against them for women's desires. Right. And that's really what sexlectics is in this aspect. And then obviously, you know, you could go to other aspects where, like, you think about Peter Thiel and then you kind of think like, oh, why does he fund all these different younger men? Like, something strange is going on there.
100%. Why is it like, you know, there's a whole bunch of stuff where it's like, you know, someone brought up in the chat, sexlectics is very important to the blackmail aspect, right? Mm-hmm. This is an important point. When we talk, I want to talk about what you said first, where it's like feminism is a tactic. You know what's a great example of that? Me Too.
Sure.
Me Too in Hollywood and Harvey Weinstein, right? Mm-hmm. Because sexlectics is the casting couch, right? It's about taking the principle of the casting couch and taking it not just from the entertainment industry, but applying it to, well, the take selling market is an entertainment industry, right? Take selling is entertainment industry, but apply it to everything, right? Whether it's every single industry works on a casting couch type of basis, mm-hmm. right? Every institution. What Harvey Weinstein was having this kind of really disgusting guy, physically disgusting guy, be a kind of sin eater for the whole industry to say, whoa, the casting couch isn't inherently baked into every industry and especially this industry. It was this one especially predatory man. Mm-hmm. But the way that actually manifested itself was these feminists, these older women, these older successful actresses who in their youth had traded off of their sexuality, right? They would reframe it as they got older, be like, well, I was taken advantage of by producer. No, bitch, you're a grown-ass woman, whether you were 19, 18, whatever, you're a grown-ass woman and you traded on your pussy to get ahead in your industry. Right. You weaponized sexlectics to your advantage. But now as the tides are kind of shifting, what you saw was an opportunity to pull the ladder up behind you. So now you're a 40-year-old woman decrying the crimes of Harvey Weinstein, but what you're really doing is you're pulling up the ladder behind you so that the next 18-year-old cannot do what you did, because now all the producers are scared of being like, hey, you want the role? I got that clock, 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 clock. You know, so they're not gonna be able to do that, and they're not going to be able to take advantage of the same sexlectic feminist tactics that you are able to. So it becomes this kind of market kind of gilding where it's like, we're going to protect our advance. And then you got all these old bitches in movies now where you got fucking that movie Daddy's Girl, where you have this fucking Nicole Kidman is 50 years old and fucking a 20-year-old. It's like, why am I living through these fucking menopausal women's sexual fantasies? But then one quick thing is that Nate brought up in the chat where sexlectics has a lot of aspects of this blackmail thing, right? Mm-hmm. And that gets in from, forget Weinstein, we get into Epstein. Such similar names, these people. Anyway, but we get into this thing where I say all the time, there's this weird kind of aspect, and this is why I'm so adamant about understanding the left as a political coalition, because if you don't understand tech, defense, pharma, finance, and the censorship regime and how it works for them, you can so easily get lost in the sauce where it's like, it's the Jews, or it's the globalists, it's the Democrats. It's not the Democrats, right? There's no difference between Nancy Pelosi and Mitt Romney. There's no difference between Lindsey Graham and Chuck Schumer. Those people, Lindsey Graham and Mitt Romney, I call them GOP leftists because they're advancing the interests of that same left, that political coalition that we called the left, but from the other political party, right? So when you don't understand the left, you get lost in the sauce of like, oh, it's the elite satanic pedophiles. Listen, I live in a working class neighborhood. I could throw a stone and I promise you I could hit three motherfuckers who are on the sex offenders registry, right? What makes you think that at the highest levels of power, where there's unlimited money and no accountability, that motherfuckers aren't getting into the most depraved shit that you can fucking imagine. They do it here where there is actual risk, right? And then you add on to that that we live in a theater kid occupied government. These people have a flair for the theatric. So they're not just going to fuck kids like in their basement like they do here in a working class neighborhood. They're going to get a fucking island or go to the woods and burn an owl in effigy or whatever it may be. But it's very important that it's like, yes, the sexleptics part goes as blackmail aspect where it's like, it's about understanding who's fucking who, many times kids. But it's like, this thing where it's like, when Epstein was, for some reason, Epstein has been re-talked about in the discourse recently. And what we saw in the BAP sphere was this kind of whitewashing of Jeffrey Epstein, right? Where it's I wonder why. Probably because you, like we said, you work for people who have contracts who run through Israel, and you don't want to talk about the fact that Israel was running a blackmail operation and Mossad was running a blackmail operation. So what they did was they wanted to not talk about Mossad and Israel. They wanted to talk about, oh, you guys are clutching your pearls because these guys fucked some 16 and 17 year olds. Listen, bitch, I'm Muslim. I don't give a fuck about no 16, 17. My problem is that they weren't fucking married. Have you heard how old Muhammad's wife was? But they want to make it about, oh, you guys are clutching your pearls and being hysterical women about the fucking 17 year old. No, bitch, you want to talk about that aspect because you can't talk about the Mossad Israeli aspect. And meanwhile, this whole time where you're kind of truncating the discourse between this false binary of like talking about fucking 17-year-olds and the Mossad aspect, there's this whole aspect of it that we never talk about, which is Jeffrey Epstein's connection to transhumanism, where he had like that ranch out in the Southwest where he wanted to make clones of himself. And you know why we never talk about that? Because these people, this Silicon Valley contingent, are all fucking transhumanists. That's why they like Caitlyn Jenner. That's why they like trannies. That's why they like Brian Johnson, this whole biohacking, because simultaneously, while they're extracting rents from the government for their government contracts, in the private sector, what they've been doing for 30 years is saying, listen, VC guys with too much money and not enough imagination, the singularity is just around the corner. We're going to biohack immortality any day now. Just fund my Brian Johnson-esque fucking venture, whatever. And they extract billions of dollars over the last 30 years by convincing these people that transhumanism and uploading yourself to the cloud and living forever and all that shit is just around the corner. So that's why they don't ever want to talk about Epstein from that perspective.
Damn.
Basil, I think
this was a fucking good one. This is a good one.
Well, I'm glad we could bring it about. I think that's, if anywhere, I think that's probably a decent enough place to wrap it up. There will be future conversations. I'm absolutely sure of it. So, is there anything that we didn't touch on? And if there is, feel free to touch on that. And if not, give your plugs where everybody can support you and all that good stuff.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. I love it. I love being able to, chat with a white man any day of the week. Actually, the one last thing, just one sentence that I'll leave the audience with is, it is a pro-white, pro-American, pro-mass deportation position to normalize relations with the new Afghan government. We have to normal. Every time you read a story about some Afghan migrant who's like raped a child in Europe or some bullshit, or recently in America shot a cop, all this bullshit, there's no such thing as our allies in Afghanistan. Our allies are people who are traitors. Imagine if the Chinese invaded America and we started having a bunch of people who are translating for them, okay? All of them need to go back, but in order to do so, we need to normalize relations with the Afghan government so that, because the reason that they have an asylum claim is because our government treats the current Afghan government as a terrorist state. So we got to normalize relationship so we can send them all back, and I promise you, I'll go on the last plane. So, that being said, you can find me on Twitter at Bazillion Thought. I'm also at Bear Bactrian on Substack, but it's mostly Twitter. It's the Twitter stuff.
Beautiful. Well, Basil, thank you so much. And I know I originally asked you to do it kind of last minute, and we were able to kind of rearrange. And, I think both of us should have went out and stolen bikes to celebrate Juneteenth, but that's neither here nor there.
I forgot to loot. Oh, damn it. Next year, I guess. Next year.
Well, maybe we'll have you back next year on the next Juneteenth, and we can we could just chant TND the entire time.
Inshallah, inshallah. Yeah.
All right, Basil, thank you so much. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. I would tell you my schedule, but I don't know that. But if you're in the southwestern Pennsylvania area, I know we're at the very closing hours here. If you're near the Hayes and Flea Market this weekend, we'll be playing there. Or if you're near Jurgles, we'll be playing there Monday. So everybody, thank you so much for hanging out. Until next time, take care.